The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Security tightens in New York as investigators continue to probe a deadly Manhattan truck attack.
Police found knives and notes praising ISIS inside the truck.
Big developments in the Russia probe.
The special counsel took an unusual step of issuing a press release with the indictment.
Later, Kevin Spacey responds to allegations of sexual misconduct.
Spacey says he doesn't remember the incident, but apologized for any inappropriate drunken behavior.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. First this weekend, a military judge has ruled Bo Bergdahl should serve no prison time for endangering his comrades who searched for him after he walked off his post in Afghanistan in 2009. He was held captive for 5 years by militants connected to the Taliban. Correspondent Jim Crisula is at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Army prosecutors had recommended 14 years in prison for Bergdahl, a demotion from sergeant to private, and to have him kicked out of the military. Citing Bergdahl's 5 years as a captive at the hands of the Taliban, defense lawyers asked for a dishonorable discharge for the 31-year-old soldier without any prison time. In addition to no prison time, the judge, Colonel Jeffrey Nance, ordered a demotion in rank for Bergdahl, loss of pay, and that dishonorable discharge.
President Trump has threatened the death penalty for the man police say drove a truck onto a Manhattan bike path Tuesday as authorities continue to investigate the deadly attack.
This is the moment terror suspect Safalo Saipov was captured by New York police.
He just got shot.
The newly released cell phone video begins right after Saipov was shot by 28-year-old officer Ryan Nash as he tried to flee after using a rented truck to drive down a West Side bike path. He drove for a mile, killing eight, before crashing into a school bus.
Oh, my God.
Police found knives and notes praising ISIS inside the truck. And according to court documents, recovered two cell phones. A law enforcement source tells CBS News authorities tracked the numbers on the phones and have linked them to sympathizers of a radical cause who were already on New York police radar.
There's no point thinking about the what-ifs.
5 days before the attack, London-based graphic designer Damian Erskine and his girlfriend were inside Saipov's Uber car for an hour. He picked them up at Newark Airport.
You'll get a vibe from someone, and there was nothing that would give you any sense of, obviously, what was to come.
Sources close to the investigation say an associate of Saipov who they were looking for, Mukhamed Zawir Kadyrov, has now retained a lawyer and is set to be questioned by authorities on Friday. Michelle Miller, CBS News, New York.
Security this weekend at the New York City Marathon stepped up amid terrorism concerns. On Monday, after a weekend of anticipation, former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort was indicted by a federal grand jury probing Russia's role in the presidential election. He pleaded not guilty to foreign money laundering charges. More from CBS News Justice reporter Paula Reed.
There were cameras lining the sidewalks as Manafort went to turn himself in. The special counsel took an unusual step of issuing a press release with the indictment. And just as we were through digesting all the details in that indictment, we have this bombshell out of Chicago that not only does Mueller have another set of charges, he is a cooperating witness with evidence that, again, points to this question of conspiracy or collusion.
A judge has proposed a May 7th trial date for Manafort. Two other former campaign advisors were also charged, longtime Manafort associate Rick Gates and foreign policy aide George Papadopoulos. The White House publicly brushed off the indictments. Here's correspondent Margaret Brennan.
Chief of Staff John Kelly tried to distance the president from the unfolding controversy.
All of the activities, as I understand it, that they were indicted for was long before they ever met Donald Trump.
But he told Fox News that he and the president discussed the probe multiple times a day.
It is very distracting to the president.
While reports swirled that the president was fuming Monday as the Russia indictments played out on TV, a senior Republican told the Washington Post, everyone is freaking out. But White House lawyer Ty Cobb pushed back, telling CBS News, I don't know where the perception of agita comes from, but it's not real.
Before leaving for an 11-day trip to Asia Friday, President Trump spoke to reporters on the White House South Lawn about the indictments resulting from the special counsel's investigation into possible collusions between his campaign and Russia.
There was no collusion. There was no nothing. It's a disgrace, frankly, that they continue.
White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy is traveling with the president. Stephen, what can we expect on this trip?
Well, Steve, trade and North Korea are going to be top topics on every single one of the president's stops. His first stop is in Japan. He then travels to South Korea. He goes to China. He goes to Vietnam. And then he goes to the Philippines. At every single one of those stops, North Korea and trade will be primary topics. One thing we have learned is the trip's going to be a little bit longer than we expected. The president told us before leaving Friday that he'll spend an additional day in the Philippines to attend the East Asia Summit. Now, the president's already attending an economic summit in the Philippines. It's called the ASEAN Economic Summit. But he was expected to skip the East Asia Summit, which is occurring a day later. There was a rash of reports written in the press in China and other countries, and along with analysts here in the United States, who worried that by skipping that East Asia summit, the president was essentially bowing to Chinese preeminence in the region. So he's decided to stay.
What is the president's popularity like in Asia? I mean, he's certainly popular with some leaders, like the leader of the Philippines, but how is he viewed in Asia?
With particular respect to the leader of the Philippines, Duterte, the president is said to have a warm rapport with him, which is so interesting. We'll be watching it closely because human rights experts say that Duterte has presided over essentially mass murder of suspected drug dealers. And they caution that the president ought not get too close to someone who's such an authoritarian. Elsewhere in the region, I guess it depends. The dynamic between the president and Shinzo Abe is interesting. Abe just recently won re-election, and the question for Japan is to what extent the United States will be with them if, let's just say, there's a nuclear strike on Japan by North Korea. The White House and the U.S. government has been reticent to put anything down on paper that the U.S. would launch a nuke if the North Koreans do, but what U.S. officials will certainly say is that any kind of attack like that would be met with overwhelming force.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy on the Weekend Roundup. Have a safe trip, Stephen.
Thanks, Steve.
In a new book, former DNC interim chair Donna Brazile says Hillary Clinton's team essentially took over day-to-day operations of the party, rigging the system against Senator Bernie Sanders. Brazile says an agreement reached between the DNC and Clinton's campaign to bring the party out of debt allowed Clinton to control party finances, strategy, and the money raised. CBS News political contributor and Democratic strategist Zerlina Maxwell explains Senator Bernie Sanders agreed to something similar.
Bernie Sanders had the same joint fundraising agreement with the campaign. Now, he didn't take advantage of that agreement with the campaign. He chose to fund his campaign through donations, outside donations, and not contribute to the coffers of the Democratic Party.
Still to come, silence from the president on Twitter.
Twitter says an employee intentionally deactivated the president's account.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Republicans in the House revealed their strategy to overhaul the country's tax code Thursday.
It's what they promised, and it's a great product.
GOP lawmakers were jubilant.
It's extraordinary.
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 After party leaders unveiled an ambitious set of tax cuts worth $1.5 trillion or more.
The typical family of four will save $1,182 a year on their taxes.
The plan would slash the number of individual tax brackets from 7 to 4. The top rate would remain at 39.6%, but it would only apply to households making $1 million or more. The median household making $60,000 a year would see its rate drop from 15% to 12%.
We are giving them a big, beautiful Christmas present in the form of a tremendous tax cut.
And Republicans say there's more. They want to double the standard deduction to $12,000 for individuals and $24,000 for married couples. But Democrats noted that the GOP proposal would also eliminate deductions for student loans and medical expenses. And it would slice the mortgage deduction cap for new homes in half, from $1 million to $500,000.
What they give you with one hand, they take away with the other.
The most lucrative cuts would go to U.S. businesses, including a permanent reduction in the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%.
Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Trump will nominate Federal Reserve Board member Jerome Powell to be chair. He'll replace Janet Yellen, whose four-year term ends in February.
I have nominated Jay to be our next federal chairman, and so important because he will provide exactly that type of leadership. He's strong, he's committed, he's smart.
More from CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks.
The choice of Powell has been widely expected for several days, and analysts believe the Fed governor is a safe choice who will likely maintain the central bank's current path on monetary policy. The move does break with a historical pattern, as it's the first time since 1978 that a president did not ask the serving Fed chair to remain in that position.
On Thursday evening, silence on Twitter in one unusual place. Correspondent Hannah Doba explains.
Sorry, that page doesn't exist. That's what millions of Twitter users saw after President Trump's account was deleted from the social media site. The president's personal page, @RealDonaldTrump, with 41.7 million Twitter followers, was down for about 11 minutes. Turns out, Twitter says an employee intentionally deactivated the president's account and tweeted a statement. Through our investigation, we have learned that this was done by a Twitter customer support employee who did this on the employee's last day. We are conducting a full internal review. This morning, the president responded to the disruption, tweeting in part, "I guess the word must finally be getting out, and I'm having an impact." In the past, President Trump's former White House press secretary admitted his boss liked to talk to the American people in 140 characters.
The president is the most effective messenger on his agenda, and I think his use of social media, he now has a collective total of close to 110 million people across different platforms.
The Twitterverse took notice of the president's absence. Representative Ted Lieu from California tweeted, "Dear Twitter employee who shut down Trump's Twitter, you made America feel better for 11 minutes. DM me and I will buy you a Pizza Hut pizza." The president was recently called out for his tweets on immigration by Democrat Chuck Schumer.
Look, the president ought to stop tweeting and start leading.
The temporary shutdown has many questioning how the site secures accounts of those that could potentially influence the world. Hannah Doba, CBS News.
Houston brings home the World Series Commissioner's Trophy after battling the Dodgers. More from correspondent Omar Villafranca.
I could do it. The Houston Astros are world champions!
Houston Astros fans waited 55 years for their first World Series championship. And the Astros faithful couldn't wait to celebrate. 35-year-old Chad Crawford watched the final game at Houston's Minute Maid Park with 17,000 other fans. He cried and hugged his dad, Rick.
What does this mean for a fan like you?
This is everything! We're the world champions!
The win comes just 9 weeks after Hurricane Harvey ravaged Houston and the Texas Gulf Coast. Even though many of them are still rebuilding, diehard Astros fans watched the game anywhere and any way they could.
Were you planning your evenings around watching it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like last night, I'm not cooking. We're watching the game. Went and got barbecues.
Teresa Martin watched the games in this RV, which is parked in front of her storm-damaged house. She's lived in the RV for 2 months. In between working and fixing her home, she'd watch the ball game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you forget about everything else that's going on around you. But once it's all said and done and over with, you're back to the same thing again. So it is a getaway.
Businessman Jim McInvale, also known as Mattress Mac, helped 20 first responders get away by flying them to the game and buying them tickets. Mattress Mac says the Astros championship gives people something to look forward to.
We realize I got a long road to hoe, but if I keep plugging like the Astros did, the hope is I can have a better tomorrow.
A tomorrow where the Astros are World Series champions and Houston is stronger. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Houston.
Kevin Spacey is the latest public figure to respond to sexual misconduct allegations.
I will not yield.
House of Cards star Kevin Spacey is facing harsh criticism from Hollywood and the gay community over his apology to actor Anthony Rapp.
I was told to expect a Vulcan.
There may be a misunderstanding.
Rapp, a Broadway veteran who is now featured in Star Trek Discovery, told BuzzFeed News that he remembers Spacey picking him up and putting him on the bed and then laying down on top of him. It allegedly happened after a New York party more than 30 years ago, when Rapp was just 14. Spacey says he doesn't remember the incident, but apologized for any inappropriate drunken behavior. He then revealed he is gay.
Kevin Spacey took what should be a proud and joyous moment, which is an actor coming out, and he's conflated it with something like sexual assault. This doesn't help the conversation.
Rapp's accusation comes amid a wave of harassment claims against NBC's Mark Halperin, director James Toback, and movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. Spacey's apology was scrutinized by other gay actors, including Wanda Sykes, Billy Eichner, Rosie O'Donnell, George Takei, and Zachary Quinto. Quinto called Spacey's statement a calculated manipulation to deflect attention from a very serious accusation.
In a way, I think a lot of people feel it like that's another kind of silencing of a victim.
The president of GLAAD, a gay rights organization, also condemned Spacey's statement, saying this is not a coming out story about Kevin Spacey, but a story of survivorship by Anthony Rapp and all those who bravely speak out against unwanted sexual advances. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
Up next, the Navy's latest response to two deadly ship collisions.
Fatigue did play a role in these incidents.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS News Radio podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand, or hear original audio programming like our weekend review show, The Weekend Roundup. Get politics, policy, and a side of pop culture with White House correspondent Major Garrett on our newest show, The Takeout. Get these podcasts and more from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency told Congress progress is being made in hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, but more work is still ahead.
FEMA's Brock Long told members of the Senate Homeland Security Committee that while the agency normally operates in support of local jurisdictions in time of disaster, Puerto Rico was left reeling by a 1-2 punch from Hurricanes Irma and Maria.
That puts FEMA as the primary responder and pretty much the first responder, which is never a good situation. When FEMA is the first and primary responder and the only responder for many weeks, we're never going to move as fast as anybody would like.
Long says recovery progress is being made in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, but there's still more to do. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
The Navy is recommending sweeping changes after a series of mishaps, including two deadly ship collisions that killed 17 sailors. Correspondent Kimmy McCormick has more from the Pentagon.
Chief of Naval Operations Admiral John Richardson said more operational demands led those in command to rationalize lower standards.
This resulted in a reduction of operational safety margins. Further, the demand for ready and certified ships to support operations exceeded the quantity that could be supplied.
Sailors, he said, are stretched.
Fatigue did play a role in these incidents.
Sweeping new changes are being recommended to include more sleep time for sailors, as well as more training, especially for those who stand watch. Cammy McCormick, CBS News, The Pentagon.
More questions now about two women rescued at sea by the U.S. Navy in the Pacific. More from CBS News correspondent Vicki Barker.
Dismasted, drifting, with all communications lost, Jennifer Appel and Tasha Fuyava described ship after ship ignoring their distress flares.
They actually wrote in the log, we've been left for dead.
But the Coast Guard says their boat carried a powerful emergency beacon, which the women knew about but never activated. The storm, they say, dismasted them their first night at sea. Nothing reported in the region, and they seem to have sailed past several islands with safe harbors. No explanation yet from the women. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
ISIS in Niger, where three American soldiers were killed recently, is terrorizing the country as violence surges. Correspondent Deborah Pata is there.
The village of Tongo Tongo on the treacherous border between Niger and Mali is so remote you can't even find a road that leads to it on a map. This is where Nigerian and American troops stopped to get water before they were ambushed. As they were leaving, a chilling sight. A village elder, who was so nervous he asked to speak to us at another location, told us a few men suddenly appeared on motorbikes, the preferred mode of transport for ISIS fighters. It was just a few terrorists, he says. We think if it's just a few terrorists, the soldiers can kill them easily. But we didn't know there were so many more of them waiting nearby. It was a trap.
Once the ISIS fighters had managed to lure the troops away from the village, their numbers multiplied and suddenly they were under attack. You can still see the bullet casings that are left over from the intense shooting.
The elder told us there were about 20 motorbikes with two men on each armed with either AK-47s or RPGs and at least 10 vehicles which descended on the troops. Terrified, he hid in his home throughout the fighting, which lasted well over 2 hours. All that's left now are the fragmented remnants of a battleground, the burnt-out shell of a small one-room school, blood-stained bushes, smoke grenades, and empty boxes of ammunition.
The village elder told us that terrorists often cross the border to launch small attacks, but he's never seen anything like the battle that raged at Tongo Tongo. Deborah Patter, CBS News, Niamey, Niger.
Facebook says a Russian group posted more than 80,000 times on the social media platform during and after the 2016 election. It may have reached up to 146 million users. CBS News technology consultant Larry Magid is on the line from Silicon Valley. Larry, what have we learned from Facebook?
Well, we've learned that, as you point out, it was an enormously, I'm not going to say effective campaign because we don't know that, but certainly prolific in the sense that it did reach many more million people than actually were targeted. And that's because of liking, sharing, and commenting. You can amplify on Facebook. You may send a message to Steve, and Steve may like it, and therefore Larry might see it, and Larry may share it, and others may comment, and suddenly you have a mushrooming effect. So it could have had a pretty big impact when you consider that this number of folks that received it is actually a pretty big chunk of the number that voted collectively for Clinton and Trump together. So it's a big deal when you consider how much attention that we pay to paid media in print, radio, and television. And, of course, we're not even talking about advertising. And that was the other big revelation, where some of those ads that were obviously very targeted and very fake, designed to divide us, not necessarily to support one candidate or another, but to get people riled up, to get people to show up to both a pro and anti-Muslim rally on the same day at the same place. That obviously was designed to create confrontation.
And this wasn't just Facebook that was targeted by Russia.
No, Google and Twitter were affected as well. The Twitter platform was heavily used for essentially propaganda, fake news, divisive comments. Google was used both as an advertising platform and, of course, trying to psych out the search engine to get people to pay attention to all sorts of pieces of information or misinformation that I think some hoped would influence our election. Again, we don't know whether it did, but we know that we pay attention to all other forms of media, including lawn signs. So it could very well have affected it.
How likely is it we can depend on any sort of algorithm that could be used to fight this kind of foreign propaganda?
I think algorithms can help a lot because they can flag potentially troublesome content or ads. For example, there's no reason why an algorithm couldn't, as Senator Franken pointed out, track a foreign currency being used to pay for an ad in an American election, which is on the face of it illegal. So I think algorithms can help, but at the end of the day, they have to beef up their staff. And the old idea of see something, say something applies as well, that those of us who are on social media need to report anything that's suspicious. So a combination of algorithms and people are the not complete solution, but the partial solution for a problem that isn't likely to go away completely anytime soon.
So there's a bill in Congress that aims to increase the transparency of these kinds of postings. How likely is it that Facebook will move forward with its own plans to make it clear where these postings come from and who perhaps even pays for them?
Well, Facebook has already said that it is going to create greater transparency on its ads and make it clear who paid for them and also be more careful about whose ads they accept. And that's essentially what the Honest Ads Act calls for. So the devil is always in the details, and it's not clear yet whether Facebook, for example, will support that act. But I have a suspicion that that or something very similar is likely to pass, given the way Congress people seem to be reacting to Facebook. And I don't think Facebook has any choice but to at least partially or in the spirit go along with what Congress is asking for.
CBS News technology consultant Larry Maggott. Thanks again, Larry.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, millions of fire extinguishers under recall.
You're better off to have no fire extinguisher than a defective fire extinguisher.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. On November the 10th, NASA plans to launch a new NOAA weather satellite into Earth's orbit from Vandenberg Air Force Base out in California. It's called the Joint Polar Satellite System 1. Jackie Townsend is NASA Deputy Program Director for the satellite. Jackie, what's so special about it?
Data from satellites, from polar orbiting satellites like JPSS, is used in global weather models that are used to create the forecasts. These forecasts are used to predict severe weather days in advance, like all the hurricane prediction cones that folks have been seeing over the last couple of months. But it's also used to predict your local weather.
What part of the Earth does this satellite primarily focus on? Or does it cover the whole Earth?
JPSS covers the whole Earth. That's one of the special things about these polar orbiting satellites. They orbit the Earth about 500 miles up from pole to pole, covering the entire Earth at least twice per day. So it measures the temperature and humidity of the atmosphere at all points on the globe twice a day.
How important is it that we have this tool orbiting the Earth?
It's critical. Data from polar orbiting satellites are used to forecast the weather days in advance. More accurate forecasts will lead to better planning and recovery, which saves lives and protects property. So with severe weather events like hurricanes, these early and accurate forecasts allow governments, businesses, and individuals to prepare in advance and evacuate when needed. We've seen that over the last couple months, and we've seen great examples of that. But more than that, more precise forecasts and flood predictions let folks know whether their evacuation needs to be just up the street to a hotel or they need to move 100 miles away. The increased accuracy and advanced warning helps these emergency responders, as well as businesses, stage equipment and staff just outside an affected area and be able to bring those resources in more quickly to help with recovery.
NASA Deputy Program Director for the Joint Polar Satellite System, Jackie Townsend, on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
A warning, if you depend on one type of fire extinguisher to help keep you safe, correspondent Chris Van Cleve has more on the recall affecting millions of them.
In a fire, every minute counts.
These Kidde marketing videos stress how important their products are in the event of a fire.
I grabbed my fire extinguisher and put out the fire.
Kidde makes technology that saves lives.
But the company is recalling 37.8 million of its fire extinguishers in the United States. Anne-Marie Burkle leads the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Earlier, it's a product that a lot of people have in their homes, in their offices.
The CPSC says extinguishers with plastic handles and push-button pindicators can clog, resulting in a failure to discharge. Nozzles can also pop off with enough force to cause injury. There have been nearly 400 reports of extinguishers malfunctioning, resulting in 16 injuries and one death.
You're better off to have no fire extinguisher than a defective fire extinguisher.
James McMullen, the former California chief fire marshal, says Kidde's huge market share makes the recall worrisome.
If you attack a fire thinking you're going to put it out with a defective fire extinguisher and it doesn't work, you put yourself in harm's way.
In 2014, Brendan Roscoe died in a Pennsylvania car crash after an extinguisher used by first responders malfunctioned. His family received a settlement from Kidde. In response to the recall, Kidde said in a statement, "Customer safety is our first priority," adding it's working with authorities to ensure that affected fire extinguishers are replaced as quickly as possible.
Get a new fire extinguisher free of charge in your home and have that certainty that it will work.
Kidde will replace the recalled fire extinguishers for free with new ones with metal components. A complete list is on the company's website and at cpsc.gov. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Kensington, Maryland.
As teens turn to drugs, some schools are turning to treatment.
Lisa was 14 years old when she tried drugs for the first time. Within 2 years, drinking and getting high were her top priorities. At 16, she left school for rehab.
My life was really out of control, and, you know, I thought about it, and I was like, you know, there's no way that, like, I can live the rest of my life like this. Like, I can't do this anymore.
She never returned to her public high school in New Jersey, and instead completed her senior year at this recovery high school.
Some of the support groups will happen here.
It's part classroom, part recovery program, where students commit to being drug and alcohol free, away from the temptations of their pasts.
When you look at our kids, they go into treatment, they go right back into the same district or school. They're surrounded by all their same friends. That's generally where, unfortunately, where they're meeting their drug dealers and drug using friends.
Recovery schools have been around since the 1980s, but in the past 4 years, the number has grown rapidly to 41 across the country.
I don't care if it's one kid. That we've literally changed the course of her life and the ripple effect that she's going to have on other people.
A recent government study finds nearly 9% of teenagers in the United States are abusing illegal drugs. Lisa says she's been clean for more than 2 years.
Is the temptation still there?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No.
Her new life is as a college sophomore at Rutgers University, where she lives in an alcohol-free dorm, planning for a future in finance. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Roselle, New Jersey.
New data show a rise in preterm births nationwide.
Across this country,
the grade for preterm births for the U.S. overall is a C.
The March of Dimes' Stacey Stewart says last year only 4 states showed improvement.
Nebraska, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Wyoming.
And in cities.
Irvine, California had the best birth outcomes compared to Cleveland, which had the worst.
African American women were 49% more likely to deliver babies early compared to whites. Preterm births can lead to infant deaths or be a factor in a child developing lifelong health issues. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
Activated charcoal is catching fire as a food fad.
LA's Little Damage ice cream shop serves up one of the hottest food fads.
Are you up, Preston?
People are lining up for these sweet charcoal treats. Activated charcoal claims to detoxify the body. Renee Villasenor is a believer.
Can I just get a charcoal lemonade, please?
She drinks the carbon-rich ingredient in pressed juice at least once a week.
Keeps my skin fresher, like purges some of the things that are in there.
Activated charcoal is used medically to treat alcohol and drug poisoning. For some, activated charcoal is a go-to remedy for digestion and hangovers. But doctors say there's no science to back up any of those claims.
The detoxifying agent, the activated charcoal, doesn't necessarily just take up the bad stuff. It actually takes up the good stuff as well, some calcium, some hydration, you know, water, and electrolytes.
Dr. Jamie Lapellis also warns activated charcoal can make some oral medications, like blood pressure and birth control pills, ineffective.
It's the poorest product that grabs a hold of the medication so that it doesn't make it available for the intestine to bring it into the body.
Let's go, come on.
Renee says she sees health benefits and that it's even whitening her teeth.
So the charcoal powder works really well for my teeth because I drink coffee all the time.
For others, it's a novelty worth trying.
Taylor, what do you think?
I think it's pretty good. Tastes pretty good.
Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Coming up, one popular retailer being called a pyramid scheme on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio podcasts are now on Spotify. Listen to great shows like Face the Nation, the CBS News Weekend Roundup, CBS This Morning, and more. They're all from your Spotify app on your iOS or Android device. CBS News Radio on Spotify, the leading global music streaming service, now lets you find the right podcast for every moment. Open Spotify to listen to CBS News Radio podcasts today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. One lawsuit calls a popular retailer a pyramid scheme.
I worked day and night. It was far from being part-time. It was definitely more than full-time work.
This one is called an Amelia.
Gabrielle Aranda is a former LuLaRoe retailer. She said she joined the company this past spring to spend more time with her family, but ended up investing and losing more than $9,000 in just a few months. The lawsuit seeks $1 billion for a proposed class of plaintiffs who it says were unknowingly recruited into LuLaRoe's pyramid scheme through manipulation and misinformation. The lawsuit said that none of LuLaRoe's bonus payments to their consultants depended upon an actual sale to a consumer.
Some of you guys want to know how much inventory I got.
Aranda said she had difficulty selling clothes.
Look at all of this.
But her team leader encouraged her to buy more inventory.
They're getting more money off of what I'm investing, but I'm not making anything off of it. I think my downfall was reinvesting the money that I made off of it.
The lawsuit alleges that some consultants were told to borrow money, take out credit cards, some even asked to sell their breast milk in order to purchase more inventory. In a statement, LuLaRoe said they have not been served with the complaint, but believe the allegations are baseless, factually inaccurate, and misinformed. They say their bonus plan only includes incentives that reward retail sales to consumers. LuLaRoe says it will vigorously defend against the allegation and is confident it will prevail.
Consumers really don't understand the way this works.
No, they don't.
Russell Weiner is a marketing professor at New York University's Stern School of Business. He believes the company is not a pyramid scheme.
If there are products that are actually being sold to consumers, then it's not a pyramid scheme.
LuLaRoe has faced other complaints about various issues, but has said that the vast majority of their retailers are successful and happy with their experiences. The company said that sales have put hundreds of millions of dollars in the pockets of their independent fashion retailers. Anna Werner, CBS News, Los Angeles.
TripAdvisor is under fire for how it's handled hotel reviews from travelers who say they were victims of crime.
He grabbed me with his arm, and I pushed him off with the other arm and was thrown in the bushes.
Christy Love was on a beach getaway when she says she was raped by a security guard at the highly rated Ibarostar Paraiso Maya on Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula.
I got up, I ran through the resort. I was hysterical.
When she reached the lobby, Love says the staff refused to call police, something Ibarostar disputes. A few days later, the hotel assured her that it would help her pursue justice. She says when it didn't...
My next greatest weapon was TripAdvisor.
But Love's review was rejected as not family-friendly.
It was deleted within a couple of hours every time I posted.
TripAdvisor is now apologizing 7 years after the incident, finally reposting Love's review last month. But finding her review is not easy. We are horrified, a TripAdvisor spokesperson told CBS this week, and other travelers should be aware of this incident. Love's comment came too late for 34-year-old Jamie Valerie, who says she was sexually assaulted at the same resort 2 years ago. She also tried to warn others, but says her post was rejected by TripAdvisor.
Every single time I posted, it would come down. I would get a generic email back saying that I didn't meet their requirements for posting.
More than a dozen other travelers, first flagged by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, say TripAdvisor scrubbed their crime-related reviews, too. TripAdvisor told us crimes such as robbery, theft, and rapes are being published, but a search of the site suggests the rules may be unevenly applied. Christy Love wonders how many other horror stories are out there.
I have gotten such a response of people who, it's just opened their eyes.
TripAdvisor makes most of its revenue from commissions on hotel bookings and reserves the right to remove a review at any time for any reason. However, they say they plan to debut a new system to flag hotels that may be unsafe. Tony DeCoppel, CBS News, New York.
Egypt's pyramids with another mystery.
First such find in more than 100 years. In an ancient pyramid on the outskirts of Cairo, scientists discovering a hidden chamber, a breakthrough scanning technique used to uncover this previously unknown chamber, a void that researchers say is quite big, its purpose, its uses, unknown. One scientist on the scene says it's been hidden since the pyramid was built around 2500 BC. For many, an even greater mystery remains, how were those pyramids themselves constructed? Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Cornfields are more than just food, they're fall fun.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's go.
Mike Wisseman often can't believe people actually like his business.
We have customers that show up, never missed one yet. Kind of like, I still scratch my head, this is crazy, man, they're walking through a cornfield. You know, would I pay to do this? Well, I'm a farmer, probably not. People have a blast.
Tough to navigate through?
Yeah, I think we could go that way, but it was just the dead end, so we had to turn back.
Year after year, people come to see what the Wissamans have carved into the 8-acre cornfield on their 300-year-old farm.
And then you're going to take your next right.
This year, it's a giant postcard to space. In 17 years, they've created everything from the Mona Lisa to Babe Ruth, from King Tut to Andy Warhol's Campbell's soup can, all out of corn stalks. Jess Wisseman, Mike's daughter-in-law, is now the designer. She's an artist, and the cornfield is her canvas.
We want to make it the coolest possible visual that we can achieve.
A GPS-guided mower cuts the corn while it's still short. The finishing touches are done by hand. A maze that used to take up to a month to create now takes a day.
Once we finally fly the drone up to see what it looks like, it's a very cool feeling to have created such a huge work of art.
Well, the corn maze isn't simply a novelty. At a time when farms across the country are having to make difficult economic choices, some are looking for new ways to improve their bottom line. The maize accounts for nearly a third of Warner Farms' annual profit.
We don't do nearly as much farming in the fall. We do much more entertaining in the fall.
And entertaining families at the farm each year is the real reward.
Yeah. It's fun to do stuff with family, make memories, because those no one can ever take from you.
Definitely.
In a place where you find fun by getting lost. Mola Lange, CBS News, Sunderland, Massachusetts.
Finally this weekend, some hope for folks suffering color blindness amidst nature's fall art gallery.
Lauren Van Loo is colorblind, so anytime she looked at the fall leaves and the Great Smoky Mountains, they looked dull black and beige. But last week, she used a special viewfinder at the Oberg-Gatlinburg Resort and for the first time saw yellows, oranges, and reds bursting across the landscape. She called the color red gorgeous, saying it's the most beautiful thing she's ever seen in her life. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.